Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can check out past archived programs right there on the website, as well as other important information, veritasmedical.com. Along the way, phone lines, text line always open and available at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you?
Good.
Hope you had a great weekend.
We did.
Good.
Had a great weekend.
Well, that's good, good, good. Also have a special guest on the show this morning.
Yeah, we kicked off our weekend with Chad Wall's graduation of his second daughter.
Oh.
Shout out to Trinity. I think she won every award possible, probably. Were there ropes? Ropesville ISD.
There you go. That's good.
Got a great show in store. Asked Chad to come back. He's been on a few times. He was sharing some stuff with me the other day that got me real fired up, and wanted him to share it with the audience. About some systems of the world, the ag system in particular, but I want to relate it back. A friend of mine just sent me last week a replay of a podcast that Mark Hyman, who's the head of the Institute of Functional Medicine, was speaking at a church in Harlem. This was on April 4th of 2018. It was the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s death. And Dr. Hyman was speaking at this African-American church. In the pod, the little clip is a little 12-minute clip, was reminding that community that 1.3% of the death rate was from gun violence, but 70% of the death rate was from the food system. And not only African-American, but in general in America, our death rate is exceedingly high from chronic disease, and that chronic disease is directly related to the system that makes our food. And when you really look at the, get down to the core issue there, as with so many things, money drives a lot of this. For instance, one of the things Dr. Hyman said in that clip was he was on a documentary called Fed Up, and I highly recommend that documentary. It's all about our food system and how our system of food production creates a very addictive, nutrient-depleted, pro-inflammatory food-like substance. What Americans consume mostly is food-like substances that are highly addictive, and it's really not a choice, and people come away with a victim mentality. I'm overweight or sick because of I ate too many calories and didn't exercise enough. That's kind of the basic message that people have. But if they only knew they were consuming food-like substances that were designed to make them addicted, sugar's more addictive than cocaine. These highly refined grains are highly addictive, too, because they turn into sugar. And sugar lights up the dopamine center in your brain more than cocaine does when they do these functional PET scans on the brain after consuming or giving sugar versus cocaine. It'll light it up even more. They did a rat feeding study with 50 mice and fed them sugar water for a few days and shut that off and fed them cocaine water for a few days and then opened it up to free choice, and 48 out of 50 hit the sugar water because they got more of a dopamine rush. So the food system studies food and studies how to add stuff to food to hit what's called the bliss point and to cause a hard user to emerge. These are terms that the food industry uses. A hard user being someone who comes back and consumes not just a 20-ounce Coke. Let's pick up a 2-liter Coke next time. So there's this addictive nature, and it's a design, and there's an intent to that, obviously, because of a profit motive there with our food system. But it's driving the disease. It's driving our chronic disease. And that was the whole point of Mark Hyman's little speech there. And as we sit back and look, as I was looking back over the last couple, 3 months, these systems of the world that we saw really got shaken and some totally crashed, whether it be the economic system, the healthcare system, our education system got rocked to the core. There's systems of the world that make up our culture. And yeah, we're going to talk about the agricultural system, but I'm wanting people to kind of see this theme that goes throughout just our culture, the way we operate, and medicine's a great example. You can operate these systems of the world through the lens of what I'd say is an orphan spirit, where you feel like you've got to scrounge for everything you've got. You've got to work by the sweat of your brow. You've got to provide for yourself, profit, profit, money, money, money. We've got to protect ourselves and provide for ourselves because we don't have a father to do that for us. That's this orphan kind of mentality versus knowing you're a child of the Creator of God. I mean, God made this whole earth, and He also gave us some instruction on how to manage the earth, how to rule and take dominion, and how to make decisions. What's a kingdom-minded version of an economic system? What's a kingdom, God-minded vision of an education system, of a healthcare system, of a food production system, of an agricultural system? And I believe there is a way to steward this earth and this creation in a righteous manner that will produce the most beneficial outcomes. We've chosen to go down a different path and to make decisions in all these different systems of the world that are less beneficial. One more example before we jump into the system of ag and food production, though. I was remembering back to a book I read. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't quote it. I think the name of the book was Overcoming Arthritis. But there was a story in the book, and it was back in the 1940s. The author recounted there were these two doctors working to try to figure out arthritis. Inflamed joints. How do you fix that? How do you cure that? What's the cause of that? So these two different laboratories were working on it. One doctor discovered cortisone. And if you've ever had a cortisone injection or a Kenalog shot or a steroid shot or a Medrol dose pack, all these are steroids. Steroids are big-time anti-inflammatories. They actually shut down the entire immune system temporarily. So it'll drop inflammation quickly. So if you've got a rip-roaring case of hay fever, seasonal allergies going on out here in West Texas, all the kind of farmers know, go get a shot of Kenalog and you'll feel like $1 million because that steroid will make you feel good real quick. So this doctor back in the 40s discovered this, and he gave it to a set of arthritic patients, and it was like a miracle cure. The arthritis symptoms resolved very rapidly. So everyone thought, wow, this arthritis is just a cortisol deficiency, cortisone deficiency, a steroid deficiency. And they went on to develop drugs based off of that thought process. But at the exact same time, right across the street, there was another guy studying arthritis, and what he was doing was taking the fluid out of the joints of the arthritic patients, and he was putting it under the microscope and examining it, and what he was seeing was little tiny microbes, mycoplasma in particular, a type of bacteria, and there shouldn't be bacteria in those joints. And his hypothesis was these germs were in the wrong spot. They were in the joint, and the immune system was seeing that, and they were coming in into that joint to attack and try to clear that bug out. For some reason, they weren't able to fully clear it out, so it was this chronic fight, this chronic state of inflammation. So this doctor gave some antibiotics to kill the mycoplasm, and it took some time, but the arthritic symptoms got better too. But cortisone worked a lot faster. And so there was a divergence at that point. There was a Y in the road, and the press, the media got behind the guy who developed the drug for steroids. And the quick symptomatic relief wasn't getting to the root cause of the inflammation, but it sure treated the symptom well. And that's just one tiny example. We made a decision to follow this guy and his theory and his philosophy and his treatment protocol, and we've continued down that path. And, of course, there's lots of other reasons why we continue down that path. At the turn of the century, there are all kinds of medical schools we've talked about before. There are osteopathic, allopathic, herbalist, chiropractic, homeopathic. In the United States, there were a couple dozen homeopathic medical schools. But the Flexner Report, Albert Flexner studied all these different schools, and he reported back to Carnegie and Rockefeller that he felt like this medical education should be systemized and put under one type, one philosophy, one belief system, and that's allopathic, chemical-based, pharmaceutical-based treatment. So all the other medical schools basically got shut down. Chiropractic survived, but the herbalist and the homeopaths and all the other modalities did not. And I'm not anti-standardization, but we should standardize under a kingdom model, under God's. God's got to have input in this. We can't do it solely based off man's wisdom. We talked about last week with Morley, man gets to tinkering with God's creation, and if we don't consult God, and we don't study His Word and pray and discern, then we're only using man wisdom. then we're going to have subpar results. So we see that in medicine. We see that across the board in all the systems of the world. But what Chad was sharing with me the other day, I did not realize this. And if you're a farmer, you very well know this system. But I thought it would be good for the layperson, the general public, the people not in the farm system, to understand exactly what the underbelly of this system and how it works. And I'm not here to accuse the local, obviously it's not your local ag lender and crop insurance guy and seed fertilizer man. I mean, it's kind of like the doctors. These doctors out here and everywhere, they're for the most part really good people with good hearts, and they love people, and they went to medical school to help people. But they got plugged into a system that was not a kingdom version of medicine. And so they're just now part of that system by default, and they're blind and they're ignorant to the truth because we weren't taught. We didn't learn in med school that Dr. Max Gerson presented in 1946 to the Subcommittee on Foreign Relations of the United States Senate, that Dr. Max Gerson presented 10 cases of cancer that went into remission with nutritional therapy only. Those 10 cases he pulled out of his book that had 50 cases of cancer. So he testified in front of Congress about cancer going into remission without using chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery. I didn't learn that in medical school. Neither did any oncologist. I don't believe in America. So we're part of a system that doesn't teach broadly all the different tools in the toolbox, I'll say, and sure doesn't teach from a kingdom perspective, because we have to separate church and state. Which is a whole other discussion. But I want the layperson, and particularly here locally, people to understand this system a little more, to see what farmers are kind of trapped in, the stress it drives, and how if a farmer even has an inkling to get out of that system and produce something else, we need to support that. You know, whether that's producing some local edible crops or it's producing some organic product, that any way we can support these guys, let's do it, because to get out of that system is hard. So hard, I would say almost impossible. And so we need to know that, so we can encourage these guys, we can pray for these guys, we can offer them a hand, we can give them support, we can purchase their products when they make that leap and start producing high quality, nutrient dense, beneficial products. So Chad, welcome back to the show. I know there's probably a lot of other things you want to talk about, but and this relates, and we'll get into it, the peace pillar. You know, I talk about all the time, you can eat perfect and exercise perfect and hydrate perfect, but if you're in fight or flight mode, the body can't function. It's not meant to function in fight or flight mode, no matter how well it's nourished. And I think this system of ag produces so much fight or flight. It reminds me back to one of my first patients at Garza County Health Clinic. I was a newbie, young fledgling doctor just out of training, starting out in Garza County, the only doctor in the county. And it's one of my first patients, I remember like yesterday, comes in, and I grabbed the chart off the door. The nurse had written the chief complaint was sore throat. And so I walk in expecting a sore throat complaint, and it's a farmer, and he's sitting on that table. And I asked him, I said, well, I see your chart says you got a sore throat. And he just broke down crying. And I thought, well, gee whiz, does it hurt that bad? And he looked at me square in the eye and said, Doc, I don't have a sore throat. That's just what I told the nurse, because I was too embarrassed to tell him I don't think I can make it. This guy was just at his wit's end from an emotional standpoint, and kind of depression and anxiety. And it was all related to his farming. And it was related to his crop just got held out, I think. And it was, so many years in a row of some devastating thing had happened to him. And he was just, he was done. And it was sad that he couldn't even confess that to the nurse and talk about it. He felt ashamed. He felt all kinds of stuff. But that stuck with me, the stress of being kind of at Mother Nature's. Can't control Mother Nature. So, but I'm sure he had crop insurance and that whole deal. So I don't want to come across as I'm anti all these. I mean, I know they're there for a reason, but we need to understand that system and the perversion of it and how it keeps us trapped in it, such that the end product is not beneficial for patients, for our health, for our mental state, or anything. So I'm not sure exactly where to dive in, but the whole relationship between you got to take a loan from the bank, but you got to have crop insurance, and then you got to plant a certain crop, and you know it all interrelates. And to get out of it, how do you get out of that system? So just explain and pretend you're talking to someone in New York City that doesn't have a clue of what we're even talking about with agriculture. How does a farmer get started? How does the system work? How do you get financed? How do you get the land? I mean, kind of walk through how this system works in the conventional mindset, and then we'll talk about some kingdom versions of it.
Well, so as a rule, and the way that it's been for a long time, is that if somebody wanted to get started in farming, they had to have somebody to help them. They had to have their dad or their granddad or, you know, somebody who had some land equity and potentially some equipment to use, not only to use for collateral, but also to use just because, you know, the starter farming programs that are available for a beginning farmer, which is through the FSA office, you know, FSA, Farm Service Agency, makes direct loans. And I'm not saying that that's not a good opportunity for some people. However, they, as well as most of the financial institutions that are lending money, are mostly in a spot now of only lending what your crop insurance indemnity and what your Farm Service Agency payments equate to. So essentially, you know, your operating line is based on what the guaranteed revenue is from that operation. And so if you can't, you know, as we say, hoe out a living in that scenario, then, you know, you got to have an off-farm job, or you got to be working for somebody else in the process, or, you know, all of these other things, because the only, you know, there's not enough money to live in there. There's only enough money to potentially get a crop in and cover the expenses that are required to, you know, to grow that crop without any really bad circumstances. And then, you know, hopefully at the end of the day or at the end of the season, you can pay that note back. And, you know, if you have a little bit left, that's great. But my point is that there's very little room in that for anything else. It's, you know, it's really transitioned in the last 20 years through, you know, through crop losses and through defaults on loans and, you know, and all sorts of things, that the lenders are very, very conservative in regard to having any risk in the scenario at all. It's almost as though your collateral doesn't really amount to anything. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, they inspect it and they sign off on, yes, you have all of this equipment, but it's like that's what the bank would potentially receive over and above getting the loan paid back to cover the profit that they lost out on because, you know, you didn't make a big crop and paid them back with interest and, you know, all of these things. And so, you know, it's easy to get down in the mouth about all of that, but the important thing is that just like in medicine, that has driven this system of, you know, for one, they're being enslaved to this system where everyone is guaranteed their profit except the guy who has the greatest risk. And so, you know, he's potentially, the farmer is sacrificing or potentially sacrificing and mortgaging everything on an annual basis to make one more go at it and, you know, and hope for the best. All the while, you know, the small opportunity and the little bit of hope that goes with that continues to dwindle. And so, as you and I were discussing the peace component of that, you know, it's very hard for a slave to have a peaceful mindset. You know, they're struggling to get out of the slavery. They're trying to release the bondage. And if you don't think so, just look at what's going on in the world today, particularly in the United States. You know, without getting politicized or polarized in any of that, you know, all of us who don't feel like we're in that situation really need to pay attention to those who do feel like they're in that situation, and then understand how that's, you know, how that scheme is being propagated in all of our communities, and particularly in the agricultural community of, you know, these guys don't have a lot of hope, and they certainly don't have any hope in being able to do it a different way. You know, it seems pretty far and wide that their hope is in what the government bailout will be, or whether or not they get enough price increase in the commodity markets to maybe not have to have a bailout. But beyond that, they don't have much hope in it being any different or in it being any better. And I'm, you know, and not to criticize a system that began to do a really good thing. You know, the farming was in a completely different situation in the, you know, in the late 20s and 30s and in the Dust Bowl days and the Great Depression and all of the things that, you know, that had people literally starving to death because there was no food. Mm-hmm. It's not really much different today from a standpoint of we don't have a food production issue. We have a supply chain issue. Mm-hmm. And everyone's, you know, everyone has lost hope in being able to do anything different because of all of these systems and institutions that have come about to help in those scenarios. But over the last, you know, 80 or 100 years or how long it's been moving in that direction, they've gotten to the spot of holding everyone captive really over corporate profitability. And then all of the story that's being told, just like it is in medicine, you know, everyone is just bombarded with either misinformation or incomplete information in regarding, you know, the things that they need to be doing to move that back, to shift that needle back in the direction of where a guy can have hope and where, you know, families can believe that they can earn a living, mm-hmm. you know, not get rich, just earn a living doing the thing that, you know, that they really feel like the Lord has given them a passion for.
Right.
And the systems don't support that. So as you begin to identify the things that need to change, well, the first problem is you don't have a market. You don't, you know, if you're not selling into that commodity system, then there's no place to sell your goods, essentially. And obviously with this, the tight constraints that I was describing on cash flows, you know, nobody's in a position to hold on to their commodity anymore. You know, you don't grow it and hold it to sell it into a better marketing season or anything else. It's, I mean, you need it delivered and sold, and you really need it paid for before you deliver it.
Yeah.
In most circumstances.
Right.
But everybody's being told in the process that this is what the consumer wants. You know, and the farmer believes that he's producing what the consumer wants because that's what the market demand is. When the reality is that we're seeing a huge disparity between what the consumer really wants and what the market is supplying. And the further, the larger this corporate model and this institutional model has gotten in between those two ends of that spectrum, you know, nobody really knows. The guy who's growing it doesn't really know what the consumer wants. He just knows what he gets paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumer may want something different, but all they have the ability to buy when they go to the grocery store or the local Walmart or wherever, all they have the opportunity to buy is what corporate America is telling them that they want.
Yeah.
They, you know, they don't really have an opportunity to purchase what they really want. And I would say, you know, it's part of that scheme of the separation. Much easier to conquer if you divide. And so we don't have communities anymore. We don't have a community of people who can stand together for the most part to say, this is the way that we want to do it. And we don't have, you know, on the other end of that spectrum, we don't have the group of people standing together to say, this is what we're willing to buy, mm-hmm. and we're not going to buy. You know, we're not going to buy the garbage. And so essentially, you know, that piece being gone on both ends of the spectrum, because the market doesn't have the availability to buy what they want, and the producer doesn't have the ability to produce what he really wants to produce, mm-hmm. because the system that's in between is controlling that from both ends.
Yeah.
And convincing people that you don't really want what you think you want. That's just, you know, here's all of the reasons why that's not really the way that it is. Dr. Edwards and what he thinks about the kind of food and nutrition that you need, he's just full of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really what you want. What you want is this stuff that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so from a sales and marketing standpoint, how good a marketer would you be if you couldn't sell the things that you had in stock? Mm-hmm. You would have foolishly purchased the wrong things to then resell to your customer if you can't convince your customer that the things that you have are the things that they want.
Yeah.
And so we have this, and that's where, you know, where this discussion began with you and I, is that, you know, that we've got to get some changes in place. And I'm not talking at a, you know, it would be great at a policy level. And as you and I have discussed, and I think you had Judith McGarry on your show with FARFA, the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, is a very important association for all of us to support. Even the guys who are not selling food crops, they need to be sorting. I mean, they need to be supporting this kind of organization who really is trying to protect the rights of the farmer, mm-hmm. small producer or large producer, to actually be able to sell to the market the things that they're producing.
Yeah.
Because all of the handling that goes on in between, it's not making the food safer.
Yeah.
It's not making the food better. Yeah. It's all about profitability in between. Yeah. And as we all know, for a lot of even local organizations that are marketing product or buying commodity product from the producer, you know, they're not really doing anything to improve the quality or improve the value or anything else. They're just handling it. And it doesn't really make any difference whether the producer's making any money or not. Product just needs to move. Mm-hmm. Because all of these economies are based on the product moving and everybody making a little bit out of it. And if there's, you know, if that level of movement doesn't support the farmer, well, sorry. Yeah. You know, maybe the government will bail you out.
Right.
Or you don't need to make profit because you're subsidized. You know, you're getting a handout anyway. Mm-hmm. And so you just take what we give you.
Well, so, you know, people talk about socialized medicine. You know, that system of medicine that's in between the doctor and the patient relationship, that system that requires so much, and we're not here to talk about that system. But, you know, one answer that, one's man's wisdom answer that is socialized medicine. Well, let's just let the government handle it all. Let's put the system, let's put everything all in, no individuality at all. Let's systemize the whole thing. And could that be the same with ag? Could we subsidize and systemize and socialize that whole thing, or are we already kind of there?
Already there.
Mm. That's the thing that shocked me when you and I were talking, and I just want to highlight real quick because I just remember I didn't finish the story on. So Fed Up is a documentary about food and the food like substances we all eat. Martin Luther King's widow wanted to show that film at the Martin Luther King Theater she was excited. She had watched it personally. She was going to show it to all her community. And then she called Dr. Hyman and said, "I'm sorry, we had to cancel. We had to pull out. We can't show it." And he said, "Well, why? You were so excited." Well, Coca-Cola sponsors the Martin Luther King Jr. Theater. My, come on. It's so blatant. The financial corruption in the nutrition food production realm. I think it's pretty blatant in the pharmaceutical medicine realm too. We touched on it some last show in the agriculture realm, as far as the education and the big fertilizer chemical seed companies putting money into the education system / marketing and supply system. But when we were talking, I said, well, what if a guy wanted to get out? You know, what if he wanted to grow a different crop? He wanted to not grow cotton. He wanted to grow, I don't know, something else. And I think your answer was, well, he can't do that because that's not an insured crop. So speak to that a little bit. If someone was looking to do something else, I think the layperson needs to understand how hamstrung these farmers are about getting out of that system. They can't even do it because they can't get insurance. If they can't get the insurance, then they can't get the funding, basically, right?
That's correct. And then when you add into that if you took all of those risks on your own, if you had the ability to take those risks, where are you going to sell your product?
Yeah.
Because, you know, in a commercial model, if a guy diverts very many acres to something different, he can oversupply it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, everybody is trained and conditioned through this model to produce lots as efficiently as possible. Not because the world demands what you're producing, but because the marketers and the handlers demand that product moves. And so, you know, I mean, in some instances, it moves both ways. Mm-hmm. It moves up the chain and everybody profits. And then it gets a glut and it turns around and moves back through the chain and everybody profits. Mm-hmm. And the government takes up the slack. Yeah. Well, that seems kind of like the government just decides what needs to happen because of the way that they're voting. And, you know, and I mean, so where's the representation of what the guy really needs? And if the guy's only thinking about the profitability of the matter and his representation is helping him to be more profitable by providing a market for the thing that he wants to grow or that he thinks he can grow, well, then seems like everything's working out, right?
Right. Yeah.
All the while, they have no hope. They have no peace. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they're frustrated. They're disgusted. And they don't have, I'm not saying there's no way to get out. There is. Obviously, some of us have done it. And there are lots more people thinking about doing it all of the time.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of we can't keep doing that same thing. But
right.
But what technology has done in this industrial model, and certainly in the last 30 years that I'm very well aware of it, you know, every new technology was going, that was the next thing to put hope in.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the system was failing, you know, nobody was profitable, you know, on and on and on. And so we get a new chemical, or we get a new seed technology, or we get a new this or that, or, you know, and we got all of this money and propaganda behind it to help everybody to believe that this is the thing to place your hope in, because this is what's going to change. And we've even identified all of the things that you've been struggling with, you know, all of this weed pressure and this disease pressure and all of these other things. We have figured out how to solve that problem for you. And a guy says, oh, hallelujah. You know, let me put my hope in this. And then that creates unintended consequences.
Yeah.
And then you have another problem to deal with. And
yeah.
Then here's your answer for the new problem that was just created.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the research that gets blown over or covered up or manipulated or whatever is just mind-blowing when you really dig into seeing that it's not even doing what it was represented to do.
Well, are you free to discuss a little bit of specific on that, or do you need to keep it more general like that? You were sharing privately about this seed technology, or it was encased in some kind of beneficial fertilizer and whatever, to try to make this seed work better. Some guy did some research on it and found out, wait a minute, it's doing the opposite. It's not helping.
Yeah,
but, and it, there's detrimental stuff that goes with it that's harming insects, it's harming other pieces of nature.
Right.
But the data that was being presented by, I'll call them the chemical reps, because in my world it's pharmaceutical salesmen, yeah. They come in with the shiny posters and all the bar graphs of manipulated data that's industry produced. I can imagine the same thing with this seed salesman.
It is. And then that corporate model says that it cost so little. Do you want to take that risk? And so you have a guy that has no hope or very little hope. His hope is about gone, and he's been conditioned. His mindset has been conditioned through the processes of believing that the next, you know, because there's nothing new under the sun, right? You know, we think that that's true, and we kind of act like we believe that, but then whatever the next latest and greatest technology or piece mm-hmm. of fancy painted mm-hmm. steel is, you know, that's the thing to place your hope in. That's the thing that's really going to change it, and we're conditioned to believe that way. And so then when you spread that out across billions and billions of acres, you know, the guy who's selling it doesn't have to really make very much, because everybody's mindset is in this place of believing that they've got to have it on every acre.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so entrenched in that. And I'm going to say it's just a manipulation of where they have placed their hope.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they're hoping for something better. They want something better. They do want it to be better for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been manipulated into believing that the place that hope lies is in newer technology that, you know, it's not better
yeah.
than what has always been here. In
yeah.
fact, it's causing all of these unintended consequences that makes the problem worse. But again, I remember, you know, in the last 30 years that, you know, GMO was the answer. you know, because then you can
spray all our problems.
Yeah, you can spray Roundup glyphosate over the top of everything. No more weed problem. And now everybody can attest to, oh no, weed problems got a lot worse. They didn't think they could afford the technology when it was introduced. The technology has exponentially increased in cost, and now none of them believe that they can do it without it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's amazing how that mindset has been manipulated and conditioned to these people to not have any hope outside of that next latest and greatest thing. And then you've got research that's been being done all the while, which that's what's mind-blowing to me, Ben, is when I really started, you know, finding the people who had done the research is not even hidden. Just nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
You know, what's being propagated is this misinformation, and everybody thinks that there's nothing contrary to that, and it's not true.
There's only half the story being presented. It's the same with what I mentioned, Max Gerson's testifying in front of Congress in the 40s. It's out there.
Yep.
I'm not like, that wasn't hidden. That was just in his book. And,
no.
But it's not a book that I got from the bookstore at the medical school at UT Houston.
Right.
So the information's out there. It's oftentimes contradictory to what the system's saying, though.
Yes.
All right. Well, we got to take a break, I bet. When we come back, I mean, we could probably spend a whole another half hour talking about the system, the conventional system. And I don't want to come across again as anti-technology, but my big but on it always is, because I'm not anti any particular medicine, maybe, if it qualifies with this but. And the but is, was this produced with God's point of view on the situation, with a deep understanding of how God designed the body? And if it was, and it lines up with it, and it assists the body's natural healing mechanisms, people forget. You get a paper cut, you don't think twice about a paper cut. The body's going to clot that thing off and heal it, because the body has natural mechanisms to do that. God set this creation up with natural laws that just function because that's the way it's set up and designed, and it works. People don't realize that clotting mechanism is so intricate. It's amazing. And if it wasn't dialed in just right and you didn't clot fast enough, you could bleed to death from a paper cut. Or if it was dialed in too much and you started clotting in internally before the cut even happened, it's an amazing balanced system. Same with a broken bone. It'll heal all by itself. So if some new technology comes along that lines up with the already amazing design and somehow assists it to heal and fix itself a little better, I'd highly consider it. But if not, then I've got a real big doubt in my mind. Even if it looks like on the surface it's going to help and treat a symptom, the unintended consequences. Same thing, I think, when you're dealing with plants and the land. It could look good on the surface, but if it came from man's wisdom only without God's point of view, and you didn't consider the creation and all the impacts on all of creation, when you start manipulating seed and fertilizer and land and soil and bugs and microbes and all this stuff, unintended consequences. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk about some kingdom versions where you do consult the creator of all this before you make a decision and try to just observe how nature works, and then let's try to get back to those original designs. Chad Wall's with us today. NaturalEcoRestoration.com is his website. NER, Natural Ecosystem Restoration, is his company. He's available to educate you and consult with you, and he can walk with you through some of these transitions and changes if you're wanting
offer
to
a little
do
hope.
That. Offer some hope. There we go. Because we put our hope in the source of all hope. You know, how can Chad be so confident that he could bring your 2 bales per acre of cotton up to 4? Not because of his own Chad Wall wisdom, but because he's looking to the creator of it all and trying to line up with and observe how do these systems work originally, and how can we support the land and the soil to get back to those original intent and the fruit that's produced from that effort of lining things up back with God's original intent. Could be 4 bales per acre. So stick with us. This is Ben Edwards. You're the cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, You're the Cure. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, past archived programs. You can find it all there, as well as other important information, veritasmedical.com.
Yes, sir. We're right back here with Chad Wall, Natural Ecosystem Restoration. His website, naturalecorestoration.com. Check it out. Get educated and learn more about Chad there. So we're going to go shift a little into some practical stuff, both challenges and solutions maybe. And the solution, of course, is going to come, the solution, I would submit for people to consider that the real solution, not the new shiny penny that's going to give you unintended consequences and long term is going to be more detrimental, but the true solution is going to be line it up with God's original intent. How did God design a field to produce? What are all the inputs that are needed from an original intent standpoint? So we'll get into that. But I want to start with this analogy of, because we were talking off air about how does a guy make that shift? How do you go from farming 5,000 acres of conventional cotton, spraying Roundup and all that, and all those input costs? How do you make a shift into even just organic, much less shift to a different crop or something? And it just reminded me of when I made my shift from conventional medicine. So, I mean, we were knocking it out of the park as far as the conventional model goes. We were productive. We were profitable. They put us on the front page of the Washington Post because of it. And all that boiled down to, I could see patients real fast. I could see 40 patients a day. I could do 7-minute visits, and I could multitask in that visit. And so I get paid more for working with my hands. As a conventional doctor, you get reimbursed by insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare if you do something with your hands. So if I picked out earwax out of your ear canal, I get paid like $100. Whereas if I just sat there and talked to you about your heartburn or your high blood pressure, diabetes, I got paid $50. So I do both. I'd be picking earwax out while I talk to you about your diabetes, and you double dip like that. I mean, it's legal. It's not anything nefarious, but you look for a skin mold to cut off. You look for an ingrown toenail to cut out. You look for some procedure you do with your hands, and that's because the surgeons kind of set, there's more surgeons on the reimbursement board who sets these reimbursement rates, and surgeons do things with their hands, obviously. So I knew the system, and it required a lot, but I knew how to work it and make a profit and all that. So when I shifted to a more integrative or natural approach, I kind of floundered for a little bit. Initially, I tried to ride the fence. I tried to do both. Well, let me spend a few of my hours in a day seeing people with doing a 1 to 2 hour visit to get to the root cause of it and fix it. I can just do a couple days a week that way, and then a couple days a week I'll do conventional. I'll see 50 a day. And, you know, that didn't work. Ride the fence. That did not work. And then I jumped all in to the non-conventional system, but all those doctors that I was going to learn from basically were teaching high-dollar supplements, high-dollar lab tests that insurance didn't cover, high-dollar supplements that insurance didn't cover, and then you got to pay cash to see me because insurance doesn't cover a natural doctor. So it was like, man, there's no way. So there was this alternative system, but it was putting hope in man's way of tinkering, I said last week, micromanaging the physiology with all these supplements. So I had to keep going deeper into, wait a minute, it shouldn't be this complicated. God didn't design us to, number one, to be sick, or number two, to have to worry about our health, even have to try to micromanage it so much. And that's getting down to those four pillars: nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. And if you can get back to the basics, then the body will function and fix itself. So it's focusing on the terrain. If I focus on trying to kill every little germ out there or alter every gene with a supplement or whatever, man, it gets tedious and expensive, and the outcomes are still not great. So it's just lining back up and letting God's natural order and God's natural laws come into play for you, and it will benefit you. So I had to scale way down to 5 patients a day instead of 40 a day. And I had to quit doing all these expensive supplements, get down to the core basic stuff. And patients that went with me in that, most of them did well. And they actually got well where they don't come back and see me. So that's a totally different model. The conventional model is, I'm profitable because you do have to come back and get your cholesterol and liver enzymes checked every 3 months and to get your refills and blah, blah, blah. The management of chronic disease is expensive. But you can work that system just enough if you do enough volume. And it just makes me think about these farmers out here. Man, if I could get to 5,000 acres or 10,000 or 20,000, these massive farms, maybe there's enough profit in there. But man, what does that do to the land? much less the farmer. I mean, these doctors seeing 50 patients a day, they're getting run ragged. Suicide rates are up, depression rates are up and all that, alcoholism and crazy divorce rates. So the effects on the professional and on the patient or the land, the terrain, it's not good. So if a farmer's out there and he's saying, he's nodding his head to all this, yeah, doc, that sounds great. But how does he practically make that shift? Can you really go from 5,000 acres to 500? Is bigger better? Can you make a profit with little? Can you get out of this system? So talk to us about some of the ways to try to think about doing that if someone wanted to do that.
Well, the first thing that's going to have to change, a lot of the people that I, what I consider to be the, you know, some of the men that I'm learning from in other parts of the country, and, you know, one of the hardest grounds to plow is that between your ears.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's not only the case here, that's the case in a lot of things, as you're well aware. But the first thing that has to change is the belief that supports the paradigm, so that you can understand, number one, that there is another way to do it. So it's not a silver bullet. You know, it's not a, you know, unfortunately, just like in medicine, farming has been propagated into this place of everybody liking the easy button.
Mm-hmm.
Well, GMOs made it easy. And, you know, and again, I can raise my hand and say I was one of the early adopters. I thought, you know, this fits my no-till program to a T. I can plant what I want. I can plant my cotton where I want it, in the cover that I want it in, and I can spray everything over the top. All my problems are solved, and I can go to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I mean, all of these things that we envision in our mind, I can go rope a little more, right? You know, whatever it is that I want to do,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, that's what really hook, line, and sinkers us into, well, this is the way to do it. This is a lot easier. We cover more acres. We get bigger, faster, fancier equipment with more technology in it that will take care of all that for us. We punch the easy button, and then we got more time to be a husband, or mm-hmm. we got more time to be a father, mm-hmm. or we got more time to hang out with the boys, or whatever it is you want to do, you know, whatever is important to you, you're going to have more time to do that by pushing these easy buttons. And then you run down that, and then as you described, it keeps getting bigger and faster and more of a monster. And I mean, it's almost like a dog chasing his tail,
mm-hmm.
and the dog keeps growing and he keeps getting bigger and faster, and he makes that circle a little quicker.
Yeah.
Then you're not ever catching his tail.
Yeah.
You know, and so we've got to understand that that's not the way. If I'm headed in this direction and I have no peace,
mm-hmm.
and it's keeping me up at night, and mm-hmm. it's destroying my family, you know, that was one of the things that I saw very early on as I started to shift my mind, was that, yeah, this great on-farm, you know, scenario that I think is a great place to raise a family, it's not a great place to raise a family. I mean, I'm chasing my tail.
Yeah.
I am working, you know, harder than I ever have, running faster, harder. Yeah. And, you know, and then when you do have a chance to take a break, you're too tired. You just want to, you know, you just want to rest.
Yeah, and I'll interject that model in the medicine model I was talking about. I was young and a go-getter.
Yeah.
But even in that, 5 years of that, I was having to, because reimbursement rates were getting cut by Medicare and insurance, and, well, I got to add more house calls, and I got to add the nursing home. Now, I got to add the juvenile detention center onto my caseload because I get a little more money for that, and I got to add the county jail now. And pretty soon, I mean, this consumption of more, 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 but it was driving me into the ground from a stress and a family yeah. standpoint. That's what I'm hoping to drive home here, these systems of the world, and we could bring in an educator, I bet. Maybe I will. I know some. How this education system or the financial system and how it's bigger is better. And no, that's a counterfeit. That is not an original intent of God. But back to the ag. So bigger's, you know, not better necessarily.
No, and as you start shifting, you know, again, we have to look at the foundational things. We have to look at, just like you do in medicine, what makes the system work? Well, that's all based on soil health. And most of the things that we're doing, from our tillage practices or our no-tillage practices, I mean, I've been in both camps, and I work with guys that are in both camps, and I'm telling you, the answer is not at that full pendulum swing in either direction. You know, maximum tillage is bad, but when you got a compaction issue and you got 2 or 3 inches of arable soil working, if you're, you know, depending on your moisture conditions, then that's not it either. You know, it's
the
somewhere. The no-till is not it either when you're not getting any gas exchange. Mm-hmm. You can just watch that model just continue to dwindle.
Yeah.
Because it's working less and less effectively all the time.
Right.
Well, then what do? You intervene some technology or this or that, and you get a quick response, you know. And so, you know, so a lot of guys that have tried to make a little bit of a shift, you know, I've had this conversation with one recently that, oh, well, you know, we tried going back to non-GMO and whatever, you know, a couple of years ago, and we just couldn't handle it. You know, man,
yeah.
we had weed problems that we couldn't deal with and all of these things. And what you've got to understand in that is that, you know, if you have managed all of your sickness with a handful of pills every day,
mm-hmm.
and you just stop taking the pills,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to make the root of your sickness go away.
No, you're going to get worse before you get better.
Exactly. But if you go back foundationally to how was this done a generation or two ago or three ago, and oh, well, you know, the economics of how much we had to do and all this were all different. It's because the system has created that mindset and that belief in us that that's what we have to do. And
right.
we have to keep moving in that direction instead of, no, let's go back and look at the foundation and what is it that makes it work.
Right.
And so I say, you know, we're going to have to use a few Band-Aids along the way, because if you're bleeding, you know, and it's bad enough that it needs a Band-Aid, you better put the Band-Aid on.
Yep.
You don't want to bleed to death.
Yep.
But if you don't figure out what's cutting you, you're going to run out of Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Or you're going to run out of the ability to buy the Band-Aids or, you know, afford the Band-Aids. And so as these, you know, I mean, if you look at what's going on in the animal market right now with slaughter animals and all of, you know, all of this stuff that has been created by the COVID and, you know, animals being piled up that were ready to harvest and nowhere to harvest them. And this has taken place nationwide.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the ag guys, excuse me, not they're all ag guys, but the farming guys who have commodity insurance and all of these other things to support it, they've been getting propped up for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they want to believe that they're independent or not, you know, they're not independent.
Yep.
I mean, the ones that are independent are the ones that don't go in the FSA office.
And who's that?
And there's not very many of those. Yeah. There are a few, but
count
there's
them
not
on one
very,
hand.
Yeah, there's not very many of those guys. But the, you know, the animal producers is a whole nother scenario,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, that's a machine that those animals are, you know, they're raised and it's time to harvest and they're harvested, and, you know, and then the consumer somewhere down the food chain, the consumer gets what they want at the grocery store. And that, you know, that is so out of balance that when you shut that machine down, it all stacks up. Well, then what's going to happen right behind that is that then all of a sudden there's nothing to supply the demand. So when you try to crank the engine back up,
mm-hmm.
now you got a lull again. Well, who does that serve? Does it serve the consumer? Nope. Does it serve the producer? Nope. Who does it serve? It serves that industry right
the
in
system.
The middle,
mm-hmm.
who said, you know what, let's shut it all down.
Mm-hmm.
And we got no expense now. And so market demand goes up. We sell these processed animals for twice what they were worth a month ago. And the producer has to take half as much as he was taking before because we don't have any capacity to process them.
Mm-hmm.
So part of our hope and our vision for the future is that we've got to see how to bring that disparity closer together so that the consumer actually has some say in what's being produced.
Mm-hmm.
And we as producers, if we're not producing what the consumer really wants, then shame on us.
Yeah.
Shame on us if we're not willing to consider how to grow what it is that the consumer wants.
Right.
If the consumer wants grass-fed, grass-finished, figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If the consumer wants organic, you know, don't tell him he's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out how to do it. Or keep being satisfied with what you're doing.
Or put some biased research up in his face. Say, oh, no, it's fine.
Exactly.
Well,
and so, you know, and again, and one of the big things to, you know, to speak to there that we talked about in the break is that we've got to totally change the way we approach the equation. Because it's specifically if we speak towards organic, you know, if we're dealing with the same problems that we had in a conventional system, we've got disease, we've got insects, we've got all of these things. And if we think that a little bit of market increase in price is going to help us overcome those things with more expensive and less effective tools that are organic approved, it ain't going to work.
The organic tinkering and technologies.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of guys have tried and said, oh, no, that doesn't work. No, if you haven't shifted your mindset to understanding that there's a restoration process that can take place when you focus on building that foundation correctly, then you don't have these problems that have to be dealt with less effective, more expensive tools, because you're addressing the root.
Yeah, so meaning if you get that soil right, you get the terrain right, these pests and disease stay away for the most part. And that's what we see in the human body. You focus on the terrain, you don't have to worry about the germ.
Right.
You don't have to worry about the disease or the gene.
Right.
The body will do what it's supposed to do. We ran out of time to talk about some of the really cool research and things that you work on, that you've learned about as far as the bugs in the soil and how they interact with the plant root and just even interact with the rain cycle and so many cool things that observing God's creation. So we'll have to have you back maybe next month if you can spare it. I know you're in the middle of cotton growing and getting the cotton up. But I want these farmers to really start hearing, how do you do that terrain thing? And what could it look like? Because I know one local farmer in Idaho who's narrowed his operation way down, not the humongous thing anymore. In fact, I told him now it's so small, he might can manage with some hoe hands, and I've got six of them at my house. I think you have six at your house.
So we, worst case scenario, let the kids work.
Yeah, heck yeah, get a little vitamin D and good oxygenation. When those hoes get to moving, you breathe deeper. But anyways, some of those practical steps on the terrain building I think will be great. Today's show is kind of motivate and to correlate these systems of the world so people can see this system of driven by money only, and it's easily corruptible. And there's these unintended consequences when we don't look at it from God's point of view. So hopefully that motivation, we can see the reason we need to support these guys that are making these transitions. But next month, maybe we'll talk about some of the more practical steps of making the transition, how to work on the terrain, build the terrain so you don't have to worry so much about pests and weeds and all that. So, Chad, appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Edwards.
Again, that's Chad Wall. Natural Ecosystem Restoration is his company here locally, and he can consult with you. Just check out his website, naturalecorestoration.com. This has been Edwards. You're the Cure. We'll be back next week.